Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com view presentation. More Benatar. Okay, last one, I promise. Maybe. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe I don't promise anything. Getting too tired and fed up to promise anything. It's just getting such a struggle just to find some way to find anything about what humans are saying or doing on this planet that makes any sense at all. I'm just, totally gapped in the sense that I just can't understand any of it. People are just so fucked up. Anyway, I mean, they're just so trivial and punky and stupid and, anyway. So this Carnism Debunked is the channel. The guy did a good job of interviewing Benatar. I think he asked him a lot of the necessary questions, if not. didn't let him get away with too many evasions, which was good. And so it was a good conversation to reveal that Benatar isn't much of an advocate, frankly. He just likes playing with words. We're all kind of like, it's one of these abstract things, you know, where these philosophers start talking about, well, what if the universe was a simulation, and what if it was, and it's just all babble and nonsense. Because we kind of know what it is. We kind of know the atomic physics to some extent. I mean, I'm not the standard model, not all that wooey crap, but I just mean the idea that it's a bunch of these little tiny bits that are controlling these bigger chemical bits, and then the chemical bits can do this evolving into little things that squiggle about, and then the little things that squiggle about can actually be converted into a colony of little squiggly things, and those little squiggly things can create, trillions of cells as a collective organism, and they all have different jobs, and they're in a society. And then that society mechanism, that thing of billions of little life forms, millions of billions, can end up doing this conscious thing where their brain, is creating this theater where there's a little person in the seat, and there's this, sense information coming in. It looks like a screen, a view screen, and it has sound, and it has vibrations, and it has all these little weird little sensey things. And it's just sitting there in the chair watching all of this happen, and then watching itself sweat, or cry, or feel sad, or feel sick, or, react to the stimulus of the universe, and it all gets filtered into models, and then we make comparison between things. We see somebody's face and we say, I sort of recognized, he sort of looks like that kind of thing. Is there anything I could change on that girl's face? No, I don't think so, it's perfect. Oh, that one's too perfect too. we can react with all kinds of these little emotional things, these senses that are just brain calculations, so it's all happening inside of the little gooey blob of chemical electricity, and that's what's going on. There's a universe doing all of this. Really, the big universe looks a lot like the little universe in the sense it looks like just a bunch of matter banging into matter, having very crude relationships based on I hate your guts or I love you to death, electron proton kind of stuff. You can just reduce it, and understand that that's all it reduces to. And for me, the big context is the fact that the consciousness is really just a negative mechanism. It's just a whipping boy, It doesn't ever get any carrots. It just gets an hour off here or there, where you're not going to get whipped. you know, where you're not going to be driven by addictions and necessities and obligations to keep feeding this very sensitive organism that keeps saying, I want and I need and I'm uncomfortable and I want, you know, and it's just constantly whining for attention and, you know, praise and affirmation and, you know, comfort. You know, both this, you know, in terms of what it perceives the reality as and in terms of what it sees the reality as. You know, the perception that's non-direct and the perception that's, you know, more internal and immediate. So anyway, and that gets to this, you know, too expensive thing where you just, it seems pretty easy to look at evolution and say if you have to kill 9 out of 10 of the lion cubs, well, forget it. Quit making lion cubs because you're not doing it right. And if you have to kill 9,999 baby turtles to make a turtle, well, now you know, just stop making turtles. And the same is true for humans and their dilemma of the fact is it's just way too expensive, the attachment to our friends, our pets, our siblings, our parents. And we have to watch all of this stuff get ruined if we are the lucky ones and we get to survive. You know, if we don't get ruined, we have to watch ruin. And I don't know which one is worse. I mean, I could argue that if I took all of the bad experiences, let's say the 10 times I had Lyme disease, 10 times, you know, and I just put that on a pile and I just said, you know, would I have been better off, you know, having leukemia when I was 7, you know, and getting it over with in a couple of months? You know, it's pretty hard not to say, yeah. And then if I come up with some better way, you know, where I just go to sleep and I don't wake up. I mean, I thought of that as a kid, you know, it was just this idea that, you know, remember the Lord's Prayer, you know, if I die before I wake, and I, you know, the words just kind of struck me and said, what a great idea. Yeah, why don't I die when I'm asleep? Then I won't know it happened and everything will be great. You know, I won't do my little sad, oh, I didn't get to finish. I was, you know, I was plowing a new road for my Tonka truck and I was doing some stuff and, you know, I didn't get to finish. You know, I won't have to worry about any of that stuff. So I guess that's why, you know, this particular organism is sitting in this chair, you know, having this conversation is just because, yeah, it occurred to me a very long time ago that I might be better off dead. Okay, I mean, I didn't need Benatar to say those words. You know, it just seemed a reasonable question to ask, and my answer was, yeah, I think so. You know, that's just fact is, if they had offered human beings liberal access to the choice to just die, I would have done it. I mean, I sort of even prepared myself for my speech to my family. You know, just that, you know, I can't take it. I don't like it here. I'm really uncomfortable. I just don't want to play. Okay. It's just, you know, I'm no good at this game. And, you know, you can go watch stuff die and suffer and, you know, get squished and all of that crap. I just don't want to bother. I don't want to do it. You know, it's just, I don't see the fun in it. I just, you know, I'm sick of all the little things, even, you know, we go out for ice cream or something and it's this sticky shit and then they give you this stupid paper napkin that seems to just stick to anything sticky and you're saying, what's the fucking point of this? Because now I'm going to spend the next 15 minutes trying to get napkin off my goddamn hands. I mean, I'd rather have the ice cream on my fucking hands. Little things like that. They just, you know, fuck this. I don't want to do this. It's too sloppy. You know, and then when you find out what the real game is, that it's all this subterfuge, you know, all this cheating and all this bullshit. And it's like, and then you can have everything and the next minute you have nothing. So I remember when Kennedy got drunk and the whole Chappaquiddick thing happened. And I remember hearing it. We were going fishing, and we were in the car, and it came on the radio. And, you know, I was like six, you know, something like that, five, six. And, you know, yeah, it was just like, well, he's one of those famous people with the really great life, right? I mean, you know, what the hell is going on? You know what I mean? I mean, his brother gets assassinated, and, you know, and then now his car's in a fucking creek. And you're just saying, where's the immunity here? I mean, does no one have immunity? I mean, we're all just going to be subjected to that. You know, I'm sitting in a car driving, and you're just saying, oh, is that really how we're playing? You know, that all the time I got to be, is there any streams coming to get me? Yeah, not good. All right, so I better get to it, I guess. The preamble's going on a bit. All right, so it's not a single-player game is a really important thing to recognize. So I just want to do a little bit on that. Because it, you know, they always turn this, you know, every time you try to touch any of these subjects, it's like people only have a needle that goes this way or that way. So as soon as you start to say something about the fact that, you know, you're sort of reincarnated by the fact that somebody else on Earth is going to experience life very much the same way you do, the same kind of experiences. You know, we're not one in a million or one in a billion. We're one in 467 humans. You know, if you split all the humans into 467 categories, you know, they would look a lot alike. You know what I mean? They'd be a lot alike. And then if you made 1,000 categories or 10,000 categories, you could just understand that you'd start ending up with, you know, a million people that you have an awful lot in common with. Because you're not one in a million, you're one in a, you know, whatever, 1,567. And so you will come back in the sense that there's going to be a person born to similar circumstances, similar experiences, similar conclusions, similar... Oh, fuck, another day. No, just a fact. And it should scare the fuck out of you. And so you can take that a little... So anyway, as soon as you say those words, though, you know, people start saying, what, you believe in reincarnation? No, I don't believe you are going to be reincarnated. I don't believe there's any fingerprint of your brain. I don't think there's any spirit or soul. I don't think there's any of that shit. All right? I'm just arguing from the simple fact that we're not as diverse as we think we are. The differences between the little gray cat and the little orange cat isn't that big a difference, okay? And the same is true for us. Our differences are not meaningful or significant in a lot of ways. All right. That's just a fact. We're all human. All right, so, you know, but I'm not minimizing, no. The fact is, it's different being 3 feet tall and 7 feet tall. It's different being, you know, 100 pounds and 500 pounds. There's lots of differences, physical and environmental and psychological and all of that stuff. And that's what you should appreciate, is that, well, the fact that you can say, oh, life is great and I love the challenge. Well, you have to think for a minute, what if... Okay, you did have some skin condition, you know, and the sun made little blisters all over you. What if you, and then would you be so gung-ho, okay, for playing? And again, the point is can you appreciate that your experience isn't the experience on Earth? And so, you know, you have to sort of say, what comes with the package? Because it's not a single player game. It's not a single player package. Okay, the package is for you to exist. All of the other crap has to exist. The little kids dying of cancer, all of that horrible stuff, people getting crushed in earthquakes, people driving across bridges and having barges knock the bridge down. I mean, all these horrific events have to happen to people for you to have whatever it is you think is so spectacular about your particular existence and your necessary passion to sit there and raise little ones to learn how to watch the carnage and have fun. I mean, that's what you're doing, right? You're having kids so you can raise them to be sadistic kooks. Yeah. And you call that a balanced psychology. You know, if you can watch mayhem and murder and laugh, yeah, you're healthy. Oh, God. I mean, that's when I just get so depressed, because that's just so it's, you know, it's funny, but it's fucking true. I mean, they are sadistic lunatics. People are crazy. They do, you know, the patients are running the fucking, you know, insane asylum. Anyway, there should be patients. All right, so that's probably enough. We're not going to have enough time to get through this. I'll have to make another video. But whatever. It doesn't hurt. It isn't that painful. I have to make more videos, actually. But anyway, I have to keep working on this consolidation thing. So that we got a start of it right here, right? We're rolling right along. We only need another 6,000 or 7,000 words. But not a single-player game. It's too expensive. That's the whole evolution argument. So this not a single player game is sort of an evolution argument. It's just like, it's not a single brain. I mean, there's a whole bunch of brains and they're all doing this shit. It's, you know, and you've got to understand that, you know, for your little happy brain to exist, a bunch of sad and tormented and horribly tortured brains have to exist. And they have to go through horrible experiences. You know, for you to win the war, a bunch of people have to lose the war, you know, lose it badly. All right. And it's not your money. I mean, it's just so, you know, quit thinking that the payment, that you're immune. Because if it's happening to a consciousness, it might as well be you. It's all the same brain, okay? It's brain tortured. And you just have to recognize that, damn it, I can't be thinking that because somebody else is paying, nobody's paying. No, that's not how it works. In fact, you're paying. You just don't know it. You forgot. You know. So, anyway. Leave us continue.
So that's the crucial distinction.
But what? Who are we to say that they're mistaken? On what basis do we say that they are... they're making a mistake in judging that their own life is actually good?
Who are they to say that we are mistaken about these matters? It boils down to the argument.
There you go. So it does boil down to the arguments. And I don't think there's any good arguments for a god or singularities or any kind of magical place that all the intelligences go to talk about being intelligent. Because obviously the intelligence is rather superficial. It's just a scheming intelligence. It's just a, you know, purposeful intelligence in this limited context of struggle, eke, you know, kill and eat your brother, you know, to get to the next playing piece, you know, to keep rolling your little dice and playing the game until your number comes up, okay? And, you know, and there's just no hope for any of this optimism that there's something other than giving flatworms iPod, you know, intelligence. There's no other agenda except scheming a little path through the humus, you know, and figuring out some way to sneak your way to your success and somebody else's failure. And there's no other game to play. And so there's nothing for intelligence to do but fix. And we're the problem. We're the broken. There's no broken until a human or a sentient organism shows up and needs. And that's the beginning of the end. That's the beginning of failure, is the artificial and fake necessity created by the urgency of the feeling organism not feeling badly, the need to make sure the feeling organism isn't tortured. And we do it so badly. So it's the only use for our intelligence is to prevent the harm, and we do it so badly.
So they can advance their arguments, and we can advance our arguments. And it may be...
But the problem with Benatar here is he's not advancing an argument for which means anything, because he's undoing his own deductive powers by saying, well, because I can't imagine Bugs Bunny running the universe, and I didn't, Mengele, and he having an ambition to create some beautiful thing through all of this pain and suffering, because I can't imagine it, doesn't mean somebody else can't imagine that fable, and therefore I must suspend acting because my perception doesn't match some lunatic's fake, phony, imaginary story. I mean, that's just so phony and fake. Benatar knows there's no probability, okay, that you're going to roll Bugs Bunny with the dice, okay? The dice have certain little numbers on them. No Bugs Bunny on the dice. It ain't going to happen. You can roll them forever, and Bugs Bunny's never going to roll on the dice. And God's never going to work. It's not an answer. And so you're stuck with a very insidious environment of kill and die. Kill and die. Kill and die. I mean, that's all. It's all life. Life is killing and dying. That's what life is.
That our arguments are better than theirs, or possibly that their arguments are better than ours.
Oh, whatever. And so again, the point is, it's about the fact that you're supposed to, in this very conversation, be making that comparison and pointing out the fact that their arguments are vacuous, empty, psychologically girly, okay, I mean childish, immature, uneducated, ignorant, and your opinions are thoughtful, well, logically tied together, all fact-based, and not persuaded by emotionalism and biases. So you win. That's what you're supposed to be pointing out, how I've already won, because on every standard, I've done what they aren't doing, which is being a fair cop to the facts.
Part because we are fallible, that we could be wrong about this, that we should...
Again, this thing that there's some fallibility. Okay, well, point out the fallibility. Point out how there's any possibility, you know, I'll show you the dice, that there's any possibility of Bugs Bunny's on those dice. Show me. Or quit pretending there's some fallibility. All right, we've had thousands of years here, 10,000 years of human civilizations, well, let's even say 15 or 20, of what you'd call real civilization, I guess. And we've, you know, picked at it and picked at it and picked at it, and we figured out a few of these things and the whole thing and the whole science, blah, blah, blah. And we can have pretty intelligent conversations, so why would you sit there and say, it doesn't matter? I'm just going to say, even though I'm well-informed and, you know, even spent a substantial amount of times processing, you know, the computer's gone over and over the data, and there's just no way out of the certain logical conclusions. And he's basically saying, well, fuck that. I mean, it's no point doing any of that thinking work. Because you're always going to have to blend your supercomputer with a 1943 IBM calculator. You know, you're always going to have to dilute your intelligence with the notions of some moron. And until those two things, until you can mix those two ingredients and make something decent, you know, have an agreement, forget it. Don't bother being intelligent, because you can't use it.
Not impose our views on others in a
everybody does it every day. We're having a whole political season to decide who gets to impose on who. So what a stupid thing to say. I mean it's just stupid. We're going to get imposed on, and the argument is should I allow sentient life to be imposed on by nature, which has no brain? Or shall I apply my intelligence and decide what should happen or shouldn't happen? And it's just, obviously, I win. I'm smarter than nature, okay? I passed the driver's test. It didn't pass the driver's test. simple fact, and until you prove me or demonstrate me to be crazy, you know, illogical, that I have clung to some fact that isn't a good fact, you have nothing to stop me with.
The physical way coerce them to do things, force them to do things, or not to do things. But doesn't mean you're not entitled to...
So again, we stop murderers, we stop lots of things because we know, that doesn't work, you can't do that. All right, so it's just silly to talk about this. We can't step on... Yeah, we step on shit every fucking day. So what are you talking about?
A view. And the better justification you have for your view, the better view it's likely to be.
Now, just going back to the wild animal stuff, one counter-argument, I guess, I've had towards the natalist vegans who say, well, actually, George... You know, your view as an anti-natalist is toxic to animal rights because there will actually be more suffering, animal suffering on the planet by more animals existing and blah, blah, blah. One counter-argument to that is, that I've had is, let's assume for the sake of...
Look, the problem of increasing or decreasing human population, it just seems that you're mitigating against so many problems by decreasing, not increasing. So... But that's not the subject of antinatalism anyway, in my opinion. It has nothing to do with that meager ambition of creating a tiny difference in the quality of our civilization, let's say. All of that stuff is good, but that's, you know. I mean, the more civilized we are, the more we prevent the unnecessary tortures, great. But you don't get there by doing something stupid. You just don't.
The argument, they are right. And there are more beings on this planet suffering as a result of antinatalism, right? My counter-argument to that has been, this is just assuming, hypothetically, that they were right. Humans actually cause the highest intensity of suffering. I want to get your view on this. So
I would disagree with that notion that it is the highest intensity. I mean, obviously, all the crap in nature is pretty brutal. If I was a wild animal, I would want somebody to rescue me and keep me as a pet. Okay. It's a much higher quality of life. And you're gonna be fettered a lot less, and burdened, and scarred, and torn to pieces, and brutalized. So we can even see that in human beings, right? There's that famous Natural Geographic woman with the beautiful eyes in the picture, and you know, they show up 20 years later, and she looks like she's 75. come on. Civilization is. It's a much easier way to live and die. And so I'm not saying that animals in factory farms, especially pigs, don't have a less than natural life, okay? I mean, when they're penned up and tied down and they can't even move and all that stuff, that is horrible. All right, but that's not all factory farms. And then again, the way they die usually is at least expedient, okay? So... A few minutes, a few hours, a few seconds versus nature, which is going to, you know, you get bit by a Komodo dragon and you spend the next, you know, 4 weeks dying of some infection. That's, there's no way to argue that the deaths in nature are some sort of better meat grinder. It's a much worse meat grinder.
We can actually objectively measure, because a lot of people don't think we can, but I think we can actually objectively measure levels of pain. And apparently the worst ways of dying on like the pain scale that there are is being boiled alive or burned alive, right? Now, humans are the only species who can actually do this. So humans do, you know, do these horrific acts of abuse to animals, you know, pouring petrol on them and setting them alight in these horrific snuff?
Well, whatever. So that's a tiny percentage of the disgrace that, you know, the human organism is, you know, debased itself to doing, or the true sadists. So I don't know if that's worth the conversation, that influence on our blood footprint as a human race. And I'm not even sure I'm very comfortable with this whole idea of you telling me which ways to die are worse, because you haven't done any of them. So in some ways you have to survive something to know how bad it is. And a lot of those things are reported as bad. I mean, my father was burned, chemical, you know, acid, and hot, 800 degree acid. You know, it's pretty bad. And obviously, it's much worse long after. So if you survive, then it's really bad. If it kills you, it's not so bad. But if you survive, it's really bad.
Videos and stuff that go around on the internet. Humans are the only species that cage and torture animals and stuff like that. And chickens and pigs are routinely boiled alive in slaughterhouses, right? So there is the intensity of pain.
All right, so I don't know about this routinely thing. I think we have laws against some of this stuff. So, you know, I can't say, look, I haven't investigated all of them, but I think a lot of these industries have every incentive to try not to look stupid and cruel. So I think it's to their own interest to make sure that, yes, the cow is dead. I did the bolt through its little brain thing. I think there is some effort. The fact that we acquiesce to religious rituals and allow, you know, the Jews to, you know, to hand strangle animals or, you know, bleed them out or do these horrible things, well, that's just bullshit.
In argument, that humans actually cause a more intense pain than any other animal does, and that includes above, for example, hyenas, who kill in the most horrific ways, right? They eat these animals' guts out.
Exactly. So I don't even, God, Jesus, I don't even know why you're going here, because I don't see how you could possibly make this argument that the bulk of human assassinations are slowly eating things to death. I mean, I can't imagine anything worse than that. I mean, except being swallowed whole and dissolved in the acid and all that kind of crap. But I mean, geez, what are you talking about? Ooh.
While they're alive, and you know, the natalist vegans would say, you know, we need to be around to mitigate that or clear the most land space. But my counter argument to that has been that we cause actually a more intense form of suffering than any of those other animals do.
So this whole thing gets convoluted because there's some sort of antinatalism that doesn't end with extinction. So apparently there's some sort of antinatalists who are only antinatalists till you get to this population of humans or something. Or some kind of antinatalist that just wants to eradicate humans, which, what the fuck? That doesn't make any sense at all. You know, it just doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, let's get rid of the smartest animals on Earth and just leave the dumb ones here to eat each other. I mean, what the hell sense does that make? We're not the problem. Humans are not the problem. So, I mean, the antinatalist who thinks humans are the problem is, frankly, idiot, moron, kook, insane. I mean, how can you, I mean, that's Bugs Bunny and the dice again. I mean, that's just too stupid. How do you even come up with that crap? You know, that somehow humans fuck the game. No, the game was, go look at a Tyrannosaurus' skeleton. He's got this big giant mouth with these freaking 4 foot long teeth, you fucking cunt. How the fuck are you talking to me about how humans fouled the world? Oh, just so fucking stupid.
What do you make of that argument of mine?
Before I get to that, can I just deal with some of the premises of your argument? So you've spoken about an animal rights view. Now, of course, you're speaking about an animal rights view in the technical sense. Mm. And you're speaking about a view that it's wrong to do something.
All right, so wait. So I'm just going to say, I mean, like on the second page of Benatar's book, he clearly states, everything I'm going to say about the human condition you could apply to animals, reasonably. So it's not like he's separating us from nature or separating us from the basic function of all the other brainy-abled organisms.
Certain things to animals, even if you'd produce better consequences by doing that.
Yeah.
So those vegans who are vegans on animal rights grounds, then we need to think about what the consequence is going to be. If you shouldn't do something to an animal, you shouldn't do something to an animal. It doesn't matter whether, as a result of that, there are going to be more wild animals suffering. So that's the that's one important point. Now
this is sort of a, but it's not a good point in the sense that this is making rationalizations between like, well, you have to have six kids in case your kids get sick and some of them might die, so therefore you have to make extra ones, because obviously that's not going to make any sense, because you're going to end up with excess kids by your paranoia that somehow yours are going to be the one to disappear. So there's lots of illogic in mixing, you know, the order. You know, the stairs, you have to walk up the logical stairs. You can't jump a stair and then go backwards a stair, you know, that kind of thing. That won't be progress. So, yeah, you put your foot on every stair, but you put them on the wrong order. And, you know, there is sort of an order to the direction, and that's got to be maintained. So, you know, you can't use this argument that it's for me better and it's worse for the future. You can never do anything in the short term that makes the future worse. So the idea is if you save somebody, let's say somebody has a disease and you save them. Well, the point is now you've saved somebody who isn't immune. Okay. So you're diluting the genome and making everything more vulnerable to the disease or the affliction or the imperfection. So I mean, I had my appendix removed when I was a kid. So I have, you know, I have bad genetics in the sense that I have some disposition to having infected appendixes. You know, all of that stuff, as we, you know, as we do the short-term mitigation, it always has these long-term effects, and you can't ignore those. Okay, I can't say you can always have a choice, because you have to be, you have to exercise your compassion. But understand that while you're doing it, you are destroying something. You are preventing, you are giving the future shit. So your legacy is going to be shit in the future, because now everybody will have to have their appendix taken out, kind of argument.
In terms of the quantifying the amount of suffering or the intensity of suffering, it's very hard to calculate this. I mean, how many animals in the wild are being eaten alive and over how long a period? And it's probably relatively few, because most of them probably die more quickly, but they don't die.
Oh, yeah, I think it's the most of them die slowly. They get some kind of ailment. They get an infected this or an infected that, and it degrades their performance and puts them on the list to get killed sooner, the attrition. But yeah, I think that a lot of them just get consumed by parasites and diseases.
Immediately when they're in the jaws of the predator. And so quantifying these things is going to be really difficult. I do think that humans inflict vast amounts of suffering, and not just in terms of quantity, but in terms of the intensity. Mm-hmm. If you think about the daily lives of farmed animals, it's a lot worse than the daily life of a wild animal.
So I just say that's where it gets just a little tricky, because wild animals have to forage every day. They don't have food. They have to cross rivers full of crocodiles. They have to endure floods and all kinds of things that they have to survive. I just don't entirely buy that argument. I'm saying that, look, some of it is dark and is, you know, is human centipede horrible, okay? And especially, like I said, for pigs. Because they never see the daylight, and they're just stuck in one chair, in one place for their entire existence, for this one purpose of making piglets. And it's, you just can't sort of describe a more insidious, mangulous torture. But that's not all pigs.
I also don't know when it comes to the chickens, how many of the pigs are being boiled alive. In theory, these animals should be stunned before they go into the scalding tanks. Mm. But we know that that doesn't always happen. But do we know the precise rates at which it doesn't happen? So these, again, are very complex calculations. And I think they're ones that we can bypass for all the reasons that I've been espousing in our discussion so far today.
Mm.
I think that certain things we shouldn't be doing.
I think it is a distraction, okay, to sit there and make these comparisons when I think any fair evaluation of the brutality has nature way the fuck ahead. And again, that's when you start including all of the arachnids and the other, you start including all of what seem like quite complicated little organisms like ants and stuff, little tiny, tiny brains, but damn, they do an awful lot of stuff with those little tiny brains. And it would be rather idiotic to say they have no mechanism for evaluating the world and having a feeling. I mean, they have antennas to do it, they taste it, they do it all these different ways. It'd be idiotic, I think, for us to say, oh, they are sensually dead. They seem pretty highly sensitive. So anyway, I mean, I could just go with one, I could take one classification of insect or shrimp or something, and I could just say that overwhelms everything humans do. It's just in that one tiny category. Nature already wins in the torture. We do torture best, okay? I mean, nature does it really good. And it's just idiotic to say, oh, there's some sort of competition and humans are too far ahead. No, thankfully, they're way behind.
And this kind of long-term consequentialist argument is just not convincing.
Now, you've given me great ammo for another question that I'd really love to ask you, and I think my listeners as well would absolutely love to ask you on this, because I don't know how involved you are with all the kind of drama and argumentation that...
You've sort of asked the big one. Okay, would you fix it if you could? No. No.
...goes around in vegan spaces, but... there's this new killing predators argument that's been espoused recently. What? And it's even been espoused by very notable vegan YouTubers like Vegan Games. So have you heard about the argument that humans should kill vegans should support killing predators because it ultimately spares prey animals from the horrific suffering they would endure at their hands?
Yeah, it'd all be great if everything dies in some graceful way and we moderate everything's reproduction not to be out of bounds with the death or mortality rate of its children and all of that. So obviously humans, when they gained a little bit of civilization, it saved a lot of babies, and so their birth rate became unsustainable and they had to keep taking territory. So this had led to all kinds of horrors in human history, blah, 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 blah. And so we're finally to a point where it's almost where we're saying we could control the birth rate and the death rate and keep this thing in balance so we don't have to move to Mars, move the excess population, put the migrants, send the migrants to Mars. Migrants to Mars. It'll probably be a thing, right? There'll be a GoFundMe. Migrants to Mars. It's a thing. shit. it is just, I'm sorry, but the politics is just so dismal. I mean, this whole idea that you're going to, you're going to do the Statue of Liberty thing. Bring all of your broken people, bring them to America because we fix people so well. We have infinite resources and we spend so much money on broken people. Oh, that's right. We closed every loony bin, and threw them on the streets. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, we don't even have health care. That's right. Oh, yeah. What? It's just too ridiculous. too ridiculous. There's no band-aids here. You know, there's nothing. You can bear, you know, pretty soon aspirin's going to be unaffordable.
Yes, and I've written something about this, which will be published in due course.
Oh.
And my view is that that's, again, a misguided line of inquiry for the very reasons that I've been outlining so far.
Okay, I don't think you outlined anything. So this is good. It also gets to this whole thing where people talk about the decline in the number of species and biodiversity, and all. We don't need any of that anymore. We have penicillin. You know, we're way out of worrying about any kind of, we need nature to balance the system, because we can shove a stick up nature's ass anytime we want. All right, now look, the carbon thing, we can't do anything about the zillions of tons of carbon we're shoving into the frickin' goddamn atmosphere, well, back into the biosphere. but I just mean regulating the balances is nature never did it, and we can do it better. Now, we can't do it perfect, but I'm just saying, we can control better than nature is going to. Nature makes grand canyons. I mean, nature does, you know, it erodes things, it tears things to pieces, and it does that with organisms. They have to modify and change and adapt all the time. So it's not like there's some sort of level, nice playing field, and everything is nice and peaceful and quiet, and there's nobody breaking any rules. No, there's a ton of rule breaking, and we can referee some of that. So at least we can do some refereeing and make the game a little more civilized. But there's no need for, you know, we don't need 10 billion species on Earth. So if you could get rid of a whole bunch of the food chain, get rid of it. Yeah, I'm all for it. If you can, you know, I'm not saying we should pollute streams. We shouldn't make them toxic. I'm just saying if we made them sterile, you know, all the better. I mean, if the salmons don't show up to go rushing up the stream to lay eggs, I think the stream will do just fine. The stream doesn't need the salmon, okay? And we don't need to watch them all horribly die. So, yeah, let's just stop doing that.
If you were to eliminate the predators...
I mean, you're not doing whales a favor by saving them. You don't do anything a favor by saving its existence as a species. You really don't. You just subject them to being... to watching things die and then being killed. To have to watch a bad movie and then be the star of a bad movie. That's not a gift.
Then you may in fact be increasing the amount of suffering, because the animals on which they prey would very likely increase in number. And not only would they increase in number, but they'd probably die even worse deaths, because they'd now start dying of starvation, of lingering disease, whereas those animals would have been picked out earlier by predators.
So okay.
It's really not clear to me that eliminating the predator class...
I don't even know why somebody would make the argument, because this is almost like a trivial counter-argument. I mean, it doesn't take much brains at all to say... there's going to be consequences if tomorrow you just get rid of a predator. But the idea is that's not the only thing you do, okay? You replace the predation with some sort of organized, you know, suspension of its capacity to overpopulate.
Would make things better. And this is exactly another instance of humans exceeding their own limits.
So again, it's the limits of our failures are based on the fact that we too often use democracies and groupthink instead of allowing the benevolent and intelligent dictator, you know, organize the system. So we dilute our intelligence way too often. So again, for Benatar, being an intellectual and being somebody who's actually thought about this stuff and maybe wrote these concepts on a piece of paper and tried to organize them, he's way ahead of the average 1,000 people. So if you take a 1,000 people, any 1,000, Benatar is going to be in the top 1% of people who've thought about these questions, blah, 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 blah. And here he is saying, I'm not qualified. No, they're not qualified, and you know it. So, again, it's just kind of silly to say, well, and that's what's ruined every rational policy that's ever been proposed is that it has to go through these moronic mechanisms of, you know, whatever, social justice or some other horse shit that's going to dilute it into nonsense. So you take a simple good idea and they figure out how a bunch of capitalists can make money on it or, you know, some other kind of thing. You know, it's like everything is corrupted by bad motivations and stupidity.
But I know what they would say to you, your argument.
Yeah, well, tell me.
They would say that this is simply not a standard you would apply to humans. If there was like, if there was an animal going around, or let's say there was a, I think the most common analogy they used, which I think was created by Dr. Avi, was that if there's a xenomorph going around who exists in a natural predator-prey cycle with humans, you would shoot that xenomorph, would you not? You would not say, Dr. Benatar.
Might have made it complicated. If you resist, still there were saber-toothed tigers and they pulled people off the street and ate them. Yeah, we'd do something about it. Duh. So again, but that's, you know, is that really the subject? Because they're not controlling your population. They're not maintaining a biosphere. They're not stopping you from eating all the food. They're not stopping you from creating a desert. I mean, you know, so all of those other things is not, they're not playing any critical role. So that's sort of bullshit. But yes, the idea of getting rid of both the predators and the prey is a great idea. Get rid of as much of it as you can get rid of. And yes, the system will sustain, so you can do without an awful lot of stuff. I mean, some of the microbes are probably more important than any of these higher order organisms. And the ironic truth is that the microorganisms are the ones creating the balance in the you know, the breathable atmosphere and all of that. And you know, without them, you're in big trouble.
Well, you know, if we didn't shoot this, if we did shoot this predator, this xenomorph going around this African village somewhere, killing off tribes people, those tribes people would just, you know, there would be an increase in suffering. They would suffer. They would starve to death. So, do you think they're? What do you make of that counter argument?
I need to know more about the conditions of the xenomorph. What is this, an alien of some kind?
Oh, brother. Yeah, I guess that's what they're doing, which is really stupid. Okay. Xenomorph. Yeah, they're taking alien words. So obviously we hadn't adapted to that. We haven't had millions of years of living with them and therefore being semi-symbiotically, parasitically dependent on each other's existence to create our balance. And I'm not going to defend balances because balances can be recreated through some other mechanism. So you can just replace the organisms with plastic things that do the same thing without feeling. You know, you can just make a little machine, okay? If the machine eats this, eats that, and poops this, you can make a little fake fish that eats this, does that, and poops this. So you don't have to have sentient things do their little chemistry thing or provide their little, you know, in truth, you could evolve sharks to eat grapefruit. You know what I'm saying? If you threw the grapefruit in and you slowly but surely evolved the shark genome so they could eat grapefruits and, you know, get something out of it. The fact is we could evolve them into grapefruit eaters. You know, it's just a fact. All right. Where are we? 53 minutes. You know, we'll do a little more and then I'll do one more video. Just because I can. Yeah, because I can.
Yes, yes. And they need to eat humans to survive. So they're going around a human village and they exist in a natural predator-prey cycle with humans. They keep the human population down and their existence, you know, would prevent further humans in.
So again, this really isn't a sensible conversation, right? I mean, you're just saying that like the buffaloes or anything else, you could say you could have these giant herd animals. So if there wasn't something that destroyed the weak, the weakness would pollute the genome. So even that would be very destructive to the buffalo if you didn't have something that challenged the buffalo in that direct way where you're not allowed to be sick. okay, and survive and fuck, okay? You become unfuckable if you're ill or damaged. And if you don't maintain that standard, you know, then you're going to cause a very negative evolution. And it's not going to be survival of the fittest, any of that crap anymore. So you're going to cause an awful lot of legacy suffering in the sense that you will allow a degrade in function, all right? Because they'll be allowed. You'll be allowed to be sick a lot more often. And so if you allow something to be sick more often, it will be sick more often, is the argument. So there's so many elements to this. So again, these conversations are about, you know, how to tweak the biosphere are, so, I mean, it's, you know, just all the little tiny circles, you know, just even talking about, look, we can't even have rational conversations about the carbon cycle and, you know, weather patterns and, you know, even, you know, stuff about that happens over millions of years, stuff that happens over tens of thousands of years, you know, just the fact that the... Just think, I mean, well, again, I could say out of 1,000 people, how many out of 1,000 people on Earth are aware, okay, that there's a cycle, there's two cycles, the Earth turning, okay, the creating the seasons, and then the distance of the sun to the Earth when it's in that pattern. So the fact is you can have a pattern where you tilt when you're close to the sun, and then you can have a pattern where you tilt, that is, winter happens when you're really far from the sun. And so that's the ice age, right? When you're tilting, when you're really far from the sun. And this is the, you know, somewhat more normal thing. So we're somewhere in this, you know, happy period where we're tilting when we're close to the sun. And, you know, there's so many little factors. So what's the point of trying to do those kind of... Well, I'm not saying it's not worth having as a conversation, but to have it in the context of a conversation about, you know, the fact that life is not a single-player game, that it's too expensive, and that it's not your money, I think it's a little ridiculous to have that conversation when you're having this conversation. All I need to do is prove these points. And the rest of the points don't matter.
So these African villages or whatever, from starving to death and dying of horrible diseases, and they cull the weak and sickly ones. That people would say that we would obviously shoot that xenomorph, and they would probably assume that you, Dr. Benatar, would shoot that xenomorph, right, that was going around that African village.
Well, not if it has acid for blood and you live on a volcanic ground, then the acid will bleed and the volcanic lava will... Yeah. Yeah, it's too stupid.
Well, there are lots of disanalogies here between this case and the case we face with regard to wild predators. So first of all, it's not clear to me that most people would go in and shoot this animal. And I'll tell you why I think that's true. First of all, there's plenty of killing going on in Africa. And people aren't intervening to prevent that. So it's very easy to talk about how quickly we'd ration and kill people who are engaging in murder.
Yeah, and frankly, some humans will figure out, hey, you know what? If we make friends with those xenomorph guys, we can make them kill our enemies. So we can, you know, even the stupid movies Aliens was really about that, right? Using the xenomorphs as a military weapon. So, you know, the whole thing becomes, you know, come on, too silly a conversation in a way.
People, but it doesn't really happen. And sometimes it's unjustified not to be intervening, and sometimes it's justified not to be intervening. There's a lot of repression going on in various countries around the world. Russia, North Korea, China, Iran. Does it mean...
America. I don't even want to get into it, but I mean, this whole, we're being controlled by Google and Facebook and Twitter. You know, these billionaires are controlling everything we can see and do and monitoring. And it's just terrible. I mean, I don't care about the privacy thing. It's just the profiling thing. I mean, it should offend all of us, okay, to realize that the internet I see, that Google shows me, is different than the internet it shows you. That should really bug the fuck out of you that we walk into the library and they switch where all the books are. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, unless you want them, you know, to put the Bugs Bunny book, you know, the cartoon books right in front for you. Well, you asking for them to profile you is one thing, but them doing it, whether you ask for it or not, pisses me off, and I'm just surprised that it just doesn't bother you fuckers.
That we have a duty to go in there and bring about regime change. Well, no, not necessarily, because in fact we might just make things a lot worse by doing so. So one of the conditions for even the permissibility, let alone the obligatoriness of intervening, is that we wouldn't actually thereby make things...
So again, he wouldn't intervene anyway, right? Because you already said we could be wrong and we could be picking the wrong side, so we can't save the Jews because we have to kill Nazis to do it, and we can't make those decisions, so fuck all this shit. We can't make any decisions. That's not where our brain is for. Let's go ask the dead fish. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, let's go ask the trees if they agree. Oh, please. You know, well, until we have a tree consensus, you know, we just can't make this decision because, you know, the trees do have a stake in all of this and blah, 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 blah. Oh, fuck you. Too silly. Anyway, all right, so we'll call that a video. And we'll be back for a little bit more. You know, I got another, whatever, 13 minutes to go. And certainly I can turn that into another hour. But anyway, I don't think it's a totally invaluable to, you know, stray into how others are contextualizing this subject. I just argue that I just don't think they're keeping it simple, stupid, and it really is going to be like six of these little statements. Okay, we already got three of them, and there's only going to be six of them. And if these may, you know, these might even be consolidatable into one statement. You know, so it's just not that tricky. The number of facts you need to be sure of isn't very big, you know. And once you're sure of those facts, the game is over. And you pull the plug. It's like pulling the plug for somebody, right? You don't sit there and say, what if? No, you don't bother. You recognize all the probabilities and you say all the likelihoods and you know what the dice have left on them. And it's all skulls and crossbones. There's dice don't have anything else on them. And you're just saying, let's just stop rolling. Because these dice aren't going to do this guy any good at all. Another roll ain't going to help. All right, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Yeah, I think that's enough. Thinking. Is it enough? What was the subject? Oh, is it enough? Yeah, it's enough. All right, till the next time and such. God, it's just... So it's like all this happening at the same time. You know, me getting old and the world getting stupid happened at the same time. It's really just irritating because I didn't anticipate the two things. I mean, I could have taken the world getting stupid if I was still, you know. But I'm not. I'm tired. I'm old. And so I can't, you know. And it's just, so I could have taken getting old. And, you know, watching my life slip out of my hands and the whole thing becoming horrible, if it wasn't that the world is such a fucking fucktarded shithole and you're just like, damn, you can't leave it like this. But unfortunately, that's what's happened. I mean, the two perfect storm kind of thing. Yeah, there's a hole in your raincoat and it's a really big rain. I mean, you know, just bad luck. So anyway. Till the next time and such. But yeah, it just didn't work out. you can never know how it's going to go. You don't know what kind of stupid thing is going to happen. So, you know, you really can't rely on anything, you know. But I just, you know, I just didn't quite, I didn't see this coming. I just didn't see humans going backwards this dramatically in so few years. I mean, it's like they got so dumb in 20 years. 20 years, they lost like 50 IQ points. Amazing stupidity.